Welcome to Influential She, the podcast about accelerating the influence of women in the world.
You will find us to be a fresh voice in an old conversation.
And here we are, your amazing co-hosts, Deb Soholt
and Mel Schopp. We're so excited today to be here at National Geographic with Vicki Phillips. And just to know more about, you know, we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about your background. I think your story in itself is just an amazing one. But today we really want to talk about and focus on one of our practices, our high leverage practices, which is possibility, which immediately when we were looking at your background, it just like, it just hit because the possibilities of what you've been able to show that women can do regardless are just fascinating. So what I was doing, typically I don't take notes, but I was going to make a roadmap of everything, Vicki, that you've accomplished. So I couldn't put it all in my head because I look back. Okay, so I know where you are today, but you have, you know, you've been in all these different leadership roles that you have been from a chief. You're, I think, a teacher, correct?
Yes.
You're a teacher. You're a state policymaker, a nonprofit. You were a superintendent, chief state school officer, and then you were CEO in residence for Educurious. And then you're the director of Education College Ready at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which is just, I mean, that is just like this really amazing. I don't know if you think about it, but when you read it, it's pretty amazing. And now you're here at National Geographic. And so that in itself is impressive. But I think the thing that I know about you is how you took advantage and you never saw anything that was going to get in your way. And your story, your backstory has just always resonated with me. So I think if we could start there, tell a little bit about who you are, and then we can talk about the professional side and where we see that. You have really inspired me in many different venues that I've talked about, Vicki Phillips, and where you came from. So if you want to share that, that'd be really great.
Well, I definitely haven't had the typical career path, that's for sure. And I've, you know, been fortunate to work with and for some amazing people over the course of my career. But as you know, it's kind of a career that almost didn't happen because I grew up mm-hmm. in very challenging circumstances in a little place called Falls of Rough, Kentucky, where, you know, we hunted for our supper. We had an outhouse in the backyard. We weren't necessarily expected to do much beyond high school. And where, in fact, when I decided I was going to college, it wasn't a very acceptable thing within my home or my community. So, you know, that made me want to make sure that other young people got the same, you know, or received opportunities that I almost didn't have. And my career path has been sort of all about that. How can I have more and more influence and impact on young people and making sure that they get their opportunities by design, not by luck, as I tend to think of mine.
So before you go on into that, though, but what was the moment? What was the thing that just like, what made you actually do the jump to go to college?
Yeah, how did you decide that?
That's just without
the support, you know, from your community and family, and it was surprising.
You know, it's interesting. So many people that you ask this question to will say it was a great teacher. And I'm not saying I didn't have some great mm-hmm. teachers, but it was actually a peer. So I was junior in high school, but let me back up for a moment and say my elementary school signaled poverty. So when I went to high school, it was a big county high school, and kids from the more affluent end of the county and the poorer end of the county converged. But when my teachers asked me, you know, what elementary school I went to, and I answered, that to them signaled challenging circumstances and probably not an aspiration for anything beyond high school. So they never really talked to me about college. They gave me a good education, but they didn't talk to me about college. So I was a junior in high school. I literally walked across the street to the vocational school to take a business course. I wanted to take a business course. I wanted to join Future Business Leaders of America, not knowing that I would do anything with it, but I just thought it'd be an interesting thing to do. And I ended up sitting next to a young woman who was from the affluent end of the county. And we became friends. And I will never forget when she said something about going to college, and I said, I'm not going to college. She pretty much yelled at me and said, what do you mean you're not going to college? You are smart as I am. You're as articulate as I am. Absolutely, you're going to college. And then she made it her business to see that I did. She had me apply for small scholarships, which I knew nothing about. She had me take the college entrance exams and paid my way to do it, which I had no idea even existed. You know, she pushed me to go to college, which I barely understood. And, you know, even though I only went to college about 90 miles away from my home, it might as well have been 9,000. And when I went home and said, I'm going to college, my family literally said, and you are not our daughter, your values are not ours, and don't come back. You know, my family's big enough, particularly my stepfather, who was a great, kind-hearted guy, that a few months later, you know, they reached out to me and said, this isn't working, and, you know, maybe we should rethink this. But it was a little rough at the beginning.
So how did you see, and, you know, okay, so you had a peer that really was helping you and encouraging you, but this family tie, I mean, that was pretty significant of them saying, well, this does not fit our values. So what can you recall inside of you, like, there's this possibility that I have a spark. Something has told me I have to have the courage to go through that. What was that like for you? Because there had to have been some second guessing at that point.
It was. It was a very tough time because even though I grew up in challenging and poor circumstances, it was a very, very close-knit community. I mean, the kind of community where people would give you the shirt off their back. You know, if we could be dressed to go out somewhere, and if somebody knocked on our door and said, my tire is flat, my father would drop everything he was doing and go fix it. So I learned, you know, I grew up in a community where you learn to fend for yourself and look out for your neighbor. And so that sense of community and connection to community was very, very strong. And it, you know, it hurt to get in the car and go to college with my stepfather not speaking to me, my mom in tears, not knowing if I'd come back, you know, get to come back and see my family again. But there was some drive there, some quest for that possibility. And part of that stemmed, I think, from, you know, I was such an avid reader and learner. And, you know, I often say here at National Geographic, I sat in the nook of a tree pretty much every afternoon after my chores got done until it was too dark to see. And I read about all of these places, like I read about the Serengeti. I read about how the Great Wall of China got built. I went on these amazing voyages with James Cook, but all in my imagination. But that all told me that there was something else out there larger in the world. And I just had the drive to see it and to understand that possibility for myself. And thanks to this young woman who literally changed my life by opening that first door for me in a way that was unexpected, everything I've done since has just been about both getting that door opened at the next level and opening that door for others, particularly other young women.
Mm-hmm. So talk just a little bit about the career path, because it is really, it's fascinating, as you know, which I think we both look back and go, oh my gosh, how did we get to where we got? But still, you've just had a lot of different things that have just been one after another. I share a little bit about that because...
Well, yeah, and I have to credit, you know, again, great people opening doors for mm-hmm. me. I was teaching. I, you know, when I first went to college, I thought I'm not going to go into teaching, even though my mother will tell you I lined up every doll and bear I had from the time I was small and taught school. But I was resistant. So it took me a while to find my way over to the College of Education and decided I was going to teach. And when I started teaching, that was my career path. I intended to stay in the classroom my whole career. Mm-hmm. But I went, as we all do, two or three, I think I've been teaching 3 or 4 years. I went to a summer institute, and it was the State Department of Education in Kentucky was running the institute, and there was a woman, you guys may know her, Lois Adams Rogers, actually running that institute. She used to be yes. with the Chiefs, mm-hmm. and Lois, you know, kind of attached to me over the course of the week and said to me toward the end, have you thought about other things? Great to teach, but also there are other ways that you could influence other teachers and young people. And I was like, well, not really. I'm really happy teaching. But about, you know, 6 weeks later, an application for the Kentucky Department of Education came in the mail, and Lois mm-hmm. had written a note saying, you should think about this. I didn't. I trashed it. About, you know, 6 months later, another one came. I didn't. I trashed it. And when the third one came, I'm like, okay, this is getting serious now. I maybe have to think about this, because she was pushing me again and persistent about pushing me to the next possibility. So I ended up applying, got accepted into a job at the Kentucky State Department of Education, doing the first systems change project I ever ran around kids that had emotional behavioral issues, and changing everything from policy to practice, from how we assess and intervene and support those students to how we change policies around them. While I was doing that, another woman in the State Department that I was working for saw me getting a bit restless, if you will, sent me on a governmental assignment with the federal government, did that, came back to Kentucky just as the Kentucky Education Reform Act of 1990 was happening. That new commissioner saw something in me and made me a key integral chief exec on his team. After that, I got tapped by the National Center on Education and Economy at the national level. So another door opened by one of the architects of the Kentucky Reform. And during that moment is when I thought, wow, I like this national work on one hand, but it's not quite close enough to kids and teachers for me. So I then went to Philadelphia when then a very significant reformer in our country, David Hornbeck, was the superintendent. I worked for the business community externally, which gave me a very different experience running the Partnership for Reform and helping that large urban district. And for the first time thought, wow, I might want to hold a job I never thought about. I might want to become a superintendent. And so that's when I then started applying for superintendencies and a board that was just really out forward thinking on the edge again, took me up on it and again made me see a different kind of possibility. So I took on a district that was, you know, on the state's academic distress list, was had enough bravado, I guess, to think with the community I could do something about that. From that became a state chief, did my second superintendency because I wanted to figure out high schools, and then went to Bill Melinda Gates Foundation, and you kind of know the rest. All of that, I think, is because, one, I love doing work I'm inspired by with people I'm inspired by, and I feel this deep sense to give back, as I said, to make sure that kids get opportunities I almost didn't. And I am inherently, you know, optimistic enough to believe that whatever level you're at, you can see a line of sight to the classroom and have impact and make change. And because lots of people have given me a leg up and opened the door for me, I feel obligated to do the same.
You know, what's so interesting is to hear you talk about, all right, in the beginning, you actually had a couple of people that really pushed you into possibility. They could see it in you before you could see it for yourself. And then as you matured and grew into it, you use the word bravado. I guess I had enough bravado to say I could go for that. Mm-hmm. But as you started to understand yourself better, you could then see possibilities differently than other people. I mean, certainly doors opened, but you could actually go seek a new possibility at that point. Can you talk a little bit about that? If we were going to advise young women today about how to really listen to others that are pushing instead of rejection, and thinking about yourself different, because I think a lot of people think, oh no, I couldn't, I'm not possible. We hear that a lot from women about, I'm not ready, I don't have the confidence. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I think part of what happened for me wasn't that in those early years, I didn't quite gain the confidence that said I can go seek that next thing, as much as when the door opened, I had enough confidence to walk through it. And then later I could go seek it out. But, you know, I think as women, we have to be prepared to take up both opportunities. And what I watch happen with women sometimes is the door opens and they still don't walk through it, or the window opens and they don't go through it for fear that they can't quite, you know, make the grade. Or there's something sitting there that is so perfect for them, and they are worried about whether they can actually tackle it and don't just, you know, step themselves out and go for it. And I think for me, I've had the good fortune to have this lovely combination of push and pull almost at exactly the points in time when I needed it. And I've had that from men and women both, and I feel really fortunate in that regard. But I agree. I watch a lot of young women who have so much skill and who just don't quite step, feel comfortable taking that next step.
And don't you think too, thinking through a number of situations, maybe particularly in the legislature when I'd watch, you know, how men and women would interact with that. I don't think men see that there's a barrier. It's like, we're going to do this and it's just going to happen where, and I don't know if you've observed that, where there is sort of this hesitancy that what if I fail or what if I can't make this work or what if, that sometimes I think is more prevalent and they don't see that that potential or that possibility is ahead of them. Have you observed that along with women?
I also think women tend to sometimes say, well, who am I to do that?
Exactly.
Right? Who am I to go work for Bill and Melinda Gates? Who am I to take Governor Rendell up on that issue? Who am I to even, you know, aspire to do this next thing? So I think it's a combination of all those questions that women ask themselves that sometimes become barriers to that next step.
That opening that door. Yeah, that's really fascinating.
You know, I just think about, just even myself running for the legislature. And so there are many seasoned men, if you will, that run for the legislature. And I've asked them this question, like I said, when you ran, were people just like really stunned? And they were like, well, no. I mean, like I said, did anyone ever ask you, why are you doing this at this point in your life? And, you know, I was like, I was asked that all the time. Why would you do that at this point in your life? And I'm like, why not? And so I'm like, well, I guess I want to die all used up. I mean, that's what I just started answering it, because I was asked it so many times. I thought it was such a curious thing that there is kind of this separate way of thinking about women wanting to move into some spaces where they really are exercising their own truth and standing their own ground and fighting for things that really matter to them and matter to other people, because it's that way of giving back.
Well, and I think women, we sometimes tend to forget that we have this, you know, kind of unique combination of skills. And, you know, I always think about the most powerful leadership models that I see are people that can combine sort of this, you know, high expectations, high challenge for the work with this lovely combination of high support and intentionality. And for me, women bring, I'm not saying there aren't men who do too, they do. I've had the good fortune to work alongside many of them, but women in particular have that lovely, magic, sweet spot combination of those two things, and sometimes don't recognize it in themselves or don't recognize that it serves a unique purpose in leadership roles.
And so could you define that though? Because I think that's unique. Is it the empathy, or what is it that you think that they bring? Because I think that that's such an important thing to even recognize, that that's a powerful thing rather than something that we need to, you know, kind of hide from, because, and I think I feel it with you, because maybe the way that you've looked at the world or your background has brought that with you. But how do you emulate that in your leadership position? I'm just curious.
I think a lot of it is around, it's around sort of that human face, right?
Okay,
it's putting that human face on things and making sure that, you know, you're attending to people, but at the same time, you're not attending to people to such a degree that you also don't hold people to high standards of work and high expectations. And so this combination of kind of being clear about expectations and demands, but making sure that people have the right supports, the right, you know, the environment to do their best work. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that women just think about intuitively. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not saying others don't, but I think we tend to forget that we have some mastery of both of those things if we want to have mastery over them, because they're kind of intuitive for us.
And I think of that intuition, you know, there's just actually biology about that this bundle of fibers that connect our right and left brain in a woman's brain, the corpus callosum it's called, is actually more developed in a woman's brain. So the right and left crosstalk is stronger. And at first, you know, like I didn't believe that completely. They've seen this on autopsy that's true. And I think some of that's just like anthropologically that men needed to go and, you know, get the food, and women needed to take care of this. And so it is like biologically driven. And I have two sons and a daughter. And when the boys are growing up, I'd say to them, tell me what you're thinking about like right now. And they would just say one thing. I said, just that one thing? That's all you're thinking about? Yeah, I'm just thinking about that one thing. And I'm like, because we are also only thinking about one thing at a time, but it's cross-talking between logic and empathy and all the time back and forth. And so I think that's something that, you know, to think about possibilities for women, if you can tap into that and strengthen that and hone that and use that for good, that you have a lot of just innate biologic talent to be able to do it.
Vicki, I know that you've always had this interest and this passion in helping women. What are some ways in which you've done that, and what kind of opportunities and doors have you been able to help and open with? And has it been a really thoughtful way, or is it just that you find you collect them as you go along throughout your career? I'd be curious, because I know that's something you care deeply about.
I think it's been different techniques at different stages mm-hmm. of my career. Sometimes it's been being in a position where I definitely had the opportunity to give young women additional guidance and support or mentoring or coaching or leadership skills mm-hmm. or open a door that sort of, you know, I think about it like gentle pressure relentlessly applied mm-hmm. to take that next step, you know, where I nurtured and kind of pushed them to think about that and then helped support them as they did it. So sometimes I think it's been, you know, with very deep intentionality and a lot of deliberate opportunities. And at other times it's been, yes, I keep this kind of collection mm-hmm. around me at all times and kind of keep my fingers on a group of young women, both not just in the workplace where I'm at, but out in the field, and try to go back and touch them periodically to mm-hmm. see how they are and where they are and what I can do to support them, or at least to let them know that if they need some kind of support or they're thinking about taking that next stage, that I'm a good person to bounce those things off of.
So going back and taking this whole circle and going back to where you came from and thinking about that, maybe that one opportunity, that one woman who opened that door for you, and that the possibility that you may not have walked across the street to take that class, the possibility that you didn't, you know, listen to her, or the possibility that your family's influence, how has that come full circle? And have you been able to go back and within the community that you're in and let other people see what the possibility was from what you've accomplished? Is that accepted? Are people, how has that come about throughout time? Because it's got to be something for your family to watch this happen. Well, and how is that?
Yeah,
do you talk about
it
with them? I'm just curious.
I definitely have a great relationship with my family. Okay. Even though that was, you know, a period of roughness, we got past that, and I definitely have a great relationship there, and I have a fairly large extended family. But I think the way I've manifest that most is in work in the state with a lot of teachers and mm-hmm. others, and encouraging them in particular to use their voice, right? To network together, to use their voice, to become, you know, a strong force for the kinds of changes that they want to mm-hmm. see. So I definitely try to do for women in Kentucky, but also elsewhere, the same thing that Lois did for me, which is be persistent and intentional about encouraging them mm-hmm. In whatever way that they feel most comfortable mm-hmm. to begin to step out of that typical zone they're in and take up the next opportunity. And sometimes for women, that's a job, the next job.
Right.
Sometimes it's using your voice with more power because there may not be anything wrong with where you're sitting. You may just want to use your voice in some new ways.
You know, you raise a really good point in thinking about, you know, when you talk about possibility up to this point, we've been talking about going through a new door, taking on a new position. So talk a little bit about how you see possibility within the framework of the space that you're in. So you're with Bill and Melinda Gates, or you're working as a superintendent, because I think sometimes for people to open their eyes to see what is actually possible to have happen here, you know, we've been talking to women a lot about, well, how does that landscape really look? Like, how far could you go? Because sometimes people can try to push that landscape so far they get marginalized for it. So can you talk a little bit about your experience of that kind of sweet spot of possibility from within where you are right now?
Well, you know, I'm an optimist. At Gates, we would have said an impatient optimist. So I always believe that there's a next thing on the horizon if you want it or need it. And I You know, I remember reading a book a long time ago by Benjamin Zander called The Art of Possibility, which it's this. Yeah. So I always believe that that art of possibility is there, that it's always sitting in front of you, and that there are, you know, different times where you have the strength or the moment of circumstances to pick it up, and that, you know, the forces that can, you know, sometimes be against you and sometimes, you know, behind you, that you're always balancing those. But I think one thing for me has been that I feel like as a woman and as a leader, I needed over time to sort of understand myself, right? And understand my own interpersonal leadership and commitment before I could be as good as I wanted to be to help other people understand theirs. And that I needed to understand this balance between that sort of head and heart piece and how to play that out in ways that are productive and where I could keep my line of sight. And this is one thing that I find is difficult for leaders often. I find it difficult for men and women both, but often, particularly in education, for women, which is sometimes when you see that next possibility, one of the reasons you're hesitant to step in it is because it takes you away from something where you're more hands-on, where you can see immediate impact, and you think that that next level moves you away from that, and you lose your line of sight to the possibility that you could have an even greater impact on the very thing that you love the most by stepping up to that next rung or through that next door. And too often, I think we think that that takes us away from what's possible as opposed to it makes what's possible bigger for us. Am I making sense to you guys in that?
That was powerful. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
So Nat Geo, here you are, like starting
talk about the art of the possible.
Art of the possible. So you're doing like worldwide education expansion, right? Tell us a little bit about your vision for that within the organization, and what do you hope to have happen to help people overall? Because you just are so driven by giving back, not in a way that, of course, you want, you know, the geographic to be more successful under what you're doing, but just getting to know you a little bit, it's more connected to trying to change a trajectory for people. So what are you thinking within your current role?
Well, you know, I said earlier that I like doing work I'm inspired by with people I'm inspired by, and National Geographic is certainly that. And the other thing I love is being a learner. I mean, I think that is another trait that women often share, and that's hugely important because I always want to be able to challenge myself, and I want to be thinking about the next line of possibility and learning. And again, I say to people all the time, I think coming out of National Geographic, I'll be a better human being also because of the kinds of things that we learn and understand here and the affinity for what's happening on our planet and what we can help do about it. But National Geographic has had education program for some time. Interestingly enough, not a lot of people really think about National Geographic that way. And not as many teachers as we would like understand that we have this set of unique assets here to help them. So part of our goal is to expand that and to be able to reach out and touch young people around the world and teachers around the world. And part of it is to help cultivate empathy for the earth and what we can do about it so that we can continue to find solutions. But it's also to use the unique assets of National Geographic to help teachers teach science and social studies and geography and a whole array of topics, and to sort of put those supports at their disposal in only the way that National Geographic can, with our 131 years of amazing photography and video and storytellers and explorers. So our goal is to accelerate what we've been doing in education and make it much more readily accessible to teachers and young people around
the
world.
Just what an exciting.
It's fun.
So great.
It's fun.
Yeah, so exciting.
And well, such a great team of people here. I feel privileged to have joined them.
Well, Vicki, you're just like, you just show us what it means to be a possibilist and really thinking through how far you can take yourself. But what I love that you had to say is about the line of sight for you, and sorting that out as women to what really drives and motivates. And I mean, you clearly articulated that as being a continuous learner, of helping to give back, of opening up doors, but also of raising the bar on what is possible and wrapping heart around that to help people move with you in a greater vision. And to inspire people who are listening to this to just, if someone's nudging, if someone's saying, maybe you should think about it, maybe you should, you know, try to take that step through the window or the door, that there's just a lot of exciting things that you can do that will really speak to your heart and resonate with your deepest values, that can make a difference.
And I think there's a lot of people willing to surround you when you do that and help you out.
Well, you're an amazing, influential she. And we just so appreciate your time today and being with us and sharing your story. And truly inspirational, where you've come from and where you are. And just really tells women that might be listening to this that anything is possible.
Well, thank you for asking me to join you. It's lovely what you guys are seeking to accomplish with this. So I feel privileged and honored that you reached out to me.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed our podcast, we'd be so jazzed if you rate us on whatever app you use to find us. And hey, be sure to tell all your friends about Influential She.
And please visit us at InfluentialShe.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. And you know what? If you come up with a new one, please let us know. In the meantime, remember, stay influential.